Hey guys, this podcast can get really political, and there are opinions flying all over the place. So, we just wanted to say up front that the views and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the host and other contributors. They do not reflect the views and opinions of the overall Overthink Network. Say that three times fast. Anyway, thanks again, and hope you enjoy the podcast. Hello, welcome to the Resistance Rewind. Welcome back. A podcast that rewinds and reviews films from the past, but keeps its feet firmly planted in the current events of today. I'm your host, Chad Franks, and with me today is Dominic Lang. How you doing, Dom?
Doing great, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Thanks for joining the Resistance. For those of you that don't know Dom, Dom is a writer, filmmaker, and editor. He's also a podcaster on our Overthink Network, and he co-hosts a podcast called What Exactly Am I Watching Here? I'm a fan of this podcast, obviously, not just because like I'm friends with Dom, and Dom and I go back all the way to our college years, but I sincerely enjoy this podcast, so I highly recommend it. Check out What Exactly Am I Watching Here? You can get a taste of what Dom's like on this podcast and go over there and listen to that one, okay? Awesome. So just to clarify, too, what we do here on the Resistance Rewind, of course, we review older movies that are no longer in theaters, and we discuss their relevance or lack thereof in today's social climate. But I had a couple of people ask me offline, like, what exactly, like, where did the Resistance come from? We didn't really maybe explain that thoroughly enough last time. But my whole thing is, like, I feel like we're a group of people out there that are really trying to resist a lot of the negative stereotypes that are out there, negative narratives, and we're just trying to, like, build a group of people that are trying to put a bunch of positivity out in the world, but also a bunch of truth out in the world, too. So sometimes on this podcast, we'll try to fight, you know, maybe negative stereotypes, like, with bringing up good things, but also we don't want to ignore the bad things that are going on. So we're just a group of people. We're the Resistance, and we're really thankful that you're here to join us today. So, and I'm glad to have you, Dom.
Chad, I'm very glad to be here, and I'm super thankful that you've got a podcast like The Resistance Rewind. Just as a filmmaker and storyteller myself, trying to connect like what's going on in your heart to what's going on in the world around you. Mm-hmm. And filmmaking is a beautiful way of doing that. So awesome. Happy to be here.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. And that's actually one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here. I was looking forward to us having a discussion because I kind of, in my mind, whenever I'm looking at like art or looking at like sports or whatever you want to call it, I feel like there's like three classes of people. And I feel like there's people that are like fans, which I would generally describe myself as a fan. And then there's critics, which I think I'm kind of leaning over into the critic side whenever we're talking about this. But there's also artists. And I think those are there's three different people. You have the people making the art, the people that are just excited about the art, and the people that maybe are critical, good or bad, about the art. And that's why I wanted to have you on here, because I feel like you're an artist. I know you're an artist. I'm a fan of your work. And so I think it'd be kind of cool to have that dynamic as me as a kind of fan and you as an artist. We can go and tackle films together. So that'd be great.
Sounds beautiful, man.
I can't really remember when I last had any hope. And I certainly can't remember when anyone else did either. Because really, since women stopped being able to have babies, what's left to hope for?
The world was stunned today by the death of Diego Ricardo, the youngest person on the planet. The youngest person on Earth was 18 years, 4 months, 20 days, 16 hours, and 8 minutes old.
The ultimate mystery, why are women infertile? Some say it's genetic experiments, pollution. Why do you think we can't make babies anymore?
Doesn't matter. It's all over in 50 years. It's too late.
Move along! Move along!
All right, today we're going to go ahead and unwind and rewind and review Children of Men. So we'll go all the way back in the time machine to 2006. Even though this is a movie that takes place in the future, we'll go all the way back to 2006 to talk about Alfonso Cuarón's amazing film. I'm just going to go ahead and spoiler alert. I love this movie. Well, I'm probably going to gush over it, but also try to remain critical. So those of you might know, Alfonso Cuarón, he also directed Gravity, E Tu Mamá También, and of course, Harry Potter, Prisoner of Azkaban. What do you think about Cuarón? We can go deeper later, but just initial, are you a fan, not a fan? What do you think, Dom?
I'm a big fan of Cuarón. I think what I appreciate is, for me, the characters in his movies are incredibly deep feeling, and the conflicts that they're feeling are very external. I mean, you have like Prisoner of Azkaban, you have Gravity, you have these very big epic conflicts. Then you also have these smaller character beats, like Sandra Bullock in Gravity, for me, just very much thinking of her child and very much confronting that fear and choosing for herself to fight for, like, I'm going to make it through this. Like, I'm going to live. Mm-hmm. And so for me, Cuarón has a talent of keeping it intimate amidst something global, which I think you can really see in Children of Men.
Yes. Yes. Awesome, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. I think you hit the nail on the head. I'm a fan of his as well. I can't say I've seen everything in his portfolio, but what I have seen, there's so much emotion in all of his films, and the symbolism for me personally, like, really grabs me, and he has a lot of that, and we'll dive into that later on in the film and tie it into how that symbolism is so relevant today. But yeah, I appreciate your thoughts on that. This movie also stars probably my – back in the day, he was like my number one man crush, Clive Owen. So that's another reason why I like this movie. Julianne Moore, who I also love. Michael Caine is in this movie. I apologize.
Michael Caine.
Yeah, Michael Caine. Yeah, no, I also love, like, he's very different in this film too. I really like his performance. And also, I think another actor that I have immense respect for, and I'm very glad that you gave me the pronunciation on this one, Dom, because I'm not perfect at this one, but Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yes.
Everything I've seen him in, from 12 Years a Slave to Firefly or Serenity, I guess. He's just outstanding. So I think, and he does great in this film as well. Someone who I don't think her name should be, I think, higher on the film list, Claire Hope Ashtey, who plays Key in this film, and she's great. And even though he's a very minor character, I have to mention him when we're talking about the people who played in this film, Danny Houston. So
I think
he's one of the greats. And when we go into the shallow end of the pool later on, we'll have to talk about these actors and their performances. But let me also give, for those of you who maybe haven't seen this film, we are going to spoil it, but I highly recommend watching it. But I'll give you a quick synopsis of this movie. In 2027, in a chaotic world in which women have become somehow infertile, a former activist agrees to help transport a miraculously pregnant woman to a sanctuary at sea. So I did get that from the official IMDb page of Children of Men. But yes, it's an incredible film. And when I was watching it, I've watched this several times, and I've really grown with this film. I saw it first in theaters, in 2006, when I was in high school. It was actually my senior year, and I remember loving it then. But each time I watch it, not only does it become more relevant, but I also feel it just becomes so much more heavy. Like, there's a lot more I see today. But Dom, when's the first time you saw this film, and what are your impressions then, impressions now?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters. Okay. So I think it came out like Christmas 2006. And I remember being absolutely blown away. And yeah, I bought the DVD, and it's a movie that I have continually thought about. Yes, on a technical level, there are many technical achievements in the movie. But just, again, from a story and interpersonal context, it's something that's continued to stick with me.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you liked it as well. One of these days, I'm really interested to see if we have someone on the podcast that we don't agree, but I like that you and I agree on this film. This would be very hard for me, I think, if somebody didn't like this film. So kind of get into synergy a little bit, I feel like if there's another podcast on our network, The Greatest Album Ever, I think if someone was to ask me what my favorite movie ever was, Children of Men is always in my top five, and has been ever since I saw it, for sure. This movie just means a lot to me. I actually would say it's the inspiration for this podcast. So awesome. So now I think we've talked a lot about, I think, like, you know, what we like, you know, just basic what we like about the film. But I also want to kind of transition over to kind of the relevancy of this film with you. We're at the crossroads. So I always find this podcast, it's really at the intersection of, you know, social commentary, social things going on, and film. So we've talked a lot about maybe the film itself. But Dom, what do you think? Do you think that this, like, kind of passed that test? Do you think it's relevant, or has it kind of fallen out of relevancy? Like, what is your opinion on that?
No, I think it's incredibly relevant. I think, given the ebb and flow of a lot of nationalist thinking and a lot of nationalist movements, two varying, I guess, quote unquote, successes. And this movie portrays a world torn apart by nationalism. There are commercials that are played in the background that venerate Britain's kind of isolationism and their ability to stand tall amongst all the other chaos going on. And the film deals heavily with immigration, with refugees, how one group will do anything to separate and demonize and create otherness, how it mm-hmm. preys upon otherness. Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump was set to have a meeting with Mexico's president next week, but Mexico's president has decided to call off that meeting since Trump is pushing forward with a border wall that he still claims will be paid for by Mexicans.
And this is without the wall. By the way, the wall is happening, folks, okay? Believe me. The wall is happening. The U.S. has become a dumping ground for everybody else's problems. Thank you. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. We don't know what's happening. And it's got to stop. And it's got to stop fast.
Deeper in the background, you have issues concerning climate change, concerning nuclear war. And yeah, I mean, sadly, it's becoming more and more relevant.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more on that, because I feel like when I first saw this film, 2006, I saw it in theaters like you. It was in the midst of the Iraq War. And I felt like, even though I was in high school, I was really trying to be like up to date on all these things. So when I was watching it then, I felt like a connection, especially towards the later like battle scenes, like how and, you know, post 9/11, you know, anti-Muslim sentiment that was kind of going on in America at the time. I felt like some of it, the relevancy was kind of light at the time. You know what I mean? Like, either I saw some minor things like, okay, I could see how that makes sense and see how that makes sense. And then, just like you said, I completely agree with you. The movie is actually, sadly, has gotten more relevant. I really mm-hmm. wish we would have like learned our lessons then and really moved away. But I think there might have been one or two things that brought it up maybe weren't relevant. But now, like global warming, like you said, or climate change is so much more in the news. We're seeing the effects of that. And I love that, like, that's so much of the background of this movie. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, they obviously don't come out and say it. But yeah, that's just like in the background of the movie. And then, like, you know, xenophobia, things going on. We're seeing so much of that. But what I like about this movie, too, it makes me think about politics just outside of the U.S. because this takes place in London. So, you know, we can sit here and we can talk about, like, Trump, you know, reversing DACA, or Trump wanting to build the wall, or, you know, Trump. We can do that all day. And there's so much mm-hmm. relevancy with that. But we are also, you know, less than a year out of Brexit and the U.K. deciding to leave the European Union. So I like that this movie kind of just takes me out of just the American mindset and looking at the world. And like you said, there's so much of that propaganda, so much of Britain being that last hope, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but then, like, I'm all for patriotism. And that's way a lot in the news this week, right? All the patriotism stuff going on. But I'm all for that. I'm absolutely proud to be an American myself. But you can take something that great and you can turn it evil. And like you said, this movie is showing what you do if you turn it the wrong way. There's nothing wrong with saying Britain's great, the rest of the world's struggling, but we're going to do what we can. But they're turning that against people, you know, humanity. And I think that that's, you know, like the line between patriotism and nationalism, they crossed over to the nationalism. Would you agree?
Oh, totally. And that, yeah, that discussion of patriotism and nationalism is such a, mm-hmm. such a fragile line. Mm-hmm. And actually, so Eric Reed, a safety for the 49ers, mm-hmm. he wrote an op-ed just today, actually.
Oh, wow.
About why he knelt in the first place with yeah. Colin Kaepernick back in mm-hmm. August of last year.
Yeah.
And he says, "It should go without saying that I love my country mm-hmm. and I'm proud to be an American. But to quote James Baldwin, exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually."
Yes. Oh, I love that.
And so for me, like, that protest and that patriotism, there comes with it a sincerity and a necessity for that criticism, because to not have a critical or a caring or an insistent hope, that to me is the most dangerous.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good point. I like that a lot because I feel like, especially if thinking about this film, like how they went, like this world that Cuarón is depicting for us, like how they took nationalism like in the wrong direction. Like there are characters in this movie, whether it be like the Fishes or Michael Caine's character, who's a journalist, like those are people that they care about humanity, but they also care about their country. You know what I mean? Just like you're talking about these athletes that are taking a knee, they're not anti-American. You know what I mean? Like you might disagree with them. You know what I mean? Like you might be somebody out there disagree with them, but if you think they're unpatriotic or you think they don't care about the United States, if we're talking about them specifically, then I think you're misunderstanding what they're doing. Now, I'm an individual. I don't put them down for kneeling. I myself could never do that. Myself, I'm inserting my own narrative in there right now. And of course, I don't represent everybody else on this network. I know we've said that before. And I don't like throwing my resume out there. But, you know, for me, I have a military background. And there's no way I can ever do that in that situation. But at the same time, too, I would never put anyone else down for doing it. That's just like how they you know, I feel like they're trying to make a point, you know. And I feel like they're trying to make, I don't know. I look at it like the reason why I couldn't kneel during the national anthem is because I feel a tie to that community, but they feel the same way. They feel a tie to their community that they feel like is being undervalued is an understatement, I think is what they would say. But and that's okay. You know what I mean? Like they feel a connection to a community and they want to put that out there where people are going to see it. You know what I mean? Like they can do stuff on the side, but you're trying to, yeah, I don't know. I think you're totally right. Like it is a sign of patriotism, not nationalism. And all these people out there that are saying horrible things about these people, I think they're more on the nationalistic side. And then if that keeps going, we could be living in a world that looks a lot more like the one Theo is living in, I think.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally right, Chad.
Okay. I love what you said, too. So much of this movie is in the background. It's so much of those, like, the propaganda papers or the stuff. But is there anything there that you saw maybe in the news, something, like, specifically in the news, like, whether it be in America or around the world, that you thought, oh, man, I'm watching this, and this hit really close to home, you know?
So I'm going to be starting work soon. One of the organizations that I'm connected to in Portland, where I live, is a group that is involved in refugee resettlement. And okay. We work with organizations to provide resources and materials for refugee families resettling specifically in Portland, Oregon. And one of the things that this organization does is provide what are called restart kits or welcome kits. So, and it's like a clear plastic tub where you go out and you buy a welcome mat, a journal, a tea kettle with some tea packets, and there are welcome kits, there are bathroom kits, there are kitchen kits, and the idea being these families that are resettling in Portland are coming with nothing. And we, as people who seek to promote a spirit of welcome, this is a tangible, it's a limited, but it's a tangible way of doing so. And by providing a welcome mat for their new house or apartment, providing silverware and plates for their kitchen. For me, the reason, one of the main reasons I'm doing this is to call out the entirety and the dignity of that person.
Okay. Yeah.
That person is worth. They ought to feel that they can welcome people and care for people in their home or to like eat a meal. So connecting it to Children of Men, where there is such blatant dehumanizing of refugees or Fugees, as they're called in the movie. It is, in any other circumstance, these are just, they're people, like equal in need, equal in breath. And because of a structure that creates otherness, now there is this insistent dehumanizing, this insistent distancing that occurs throughout the movie. And that's where it's most most painful and most tragic.
Oh, that's a really good. I'm so glad that you brought all that up, Dom. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, because I think that's something that refugees kind of was in the news a lot earlier on when Trump was going over his like Muslim ban and how we don't want these people here. And I remember just being caught and being like, I initially get the whole, we want to keep America safe. And there may or may not be an element of people coming over here that want to do us harm. But the vast majority and all these images that I was seeing were of children, you know, were of women. And who cares if they're men? You know what I mean? Like, it's possible that they're men as well. Like, just to think that these people are evil or anything beyond that, like, it's just, that's really harsh. And to me, is very un-American, you know?
Yeah.
And so for you to share that with me, I really appreciate that a lot. Because, it wasn't in my forefront, I think, when I was watching this, when I was really focused on, like, the immigration thing. But you're right. Like, there's so much refugee. There's so many refugees. And that would happen, I think, in a country that's probably doing better off than some of the other ones. You know, London or the UK is doing pretty well relative, I think, to the rest of the world. But we see in some of the backgrounds. Yeah, there's going to be people that are going to want to be there. And when we get to that refugee camp, it was like, man, you know, these people are, you know, they're trying to just do what's best for themselves. Trying to do what's best for them on a personal level. They're not trying to hurt anybody. Or the vast majority are not trying to hurt anybody. And I think it was depicted very well in the film. We saw that the brutality the state put against them, but also just that they were human. You know, you see that woman, the Roma woman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call her a gypsy. I know that's not the right term, but in case you're not familiar with Roma, they might also know them as a gypsy. But yeah, I like how they depicted her in the film, and she was a refugee. And I think upon initial look at her, especially someone like me that, you know, as a white male, you know, you get that like, okay, this woman might be shady. This woman might be, you know, what I think people think of when they think of a refugee. They you know, she's dirty and it makes me uncomfortable to think about her. But I love that she ended up being a hero. You know, she ended up, and she even like, didn't she take the baby for a second? There was like a scene where she took a baby, and I think I initially went, oh crap, she's going to take the baby. You know what I mean? And then she didn't. She ended up being a key. I'm not trying to use that word. Yeah. She ended up being a key element to their getting to the tomorrow. And I loved that. I loved Coron totally toyed with my emotions. And that's like for the 100th time in this film. And I still, every time I see that, I loved going back on second watch and seeing, because at first I was like very uncomfortable by her, because I think that's what he was trying to get someone like me to do. And now every time I love it, because the second I see her, I'm like, oh, she's important. And I think that's, I would like more people to see that in films, you know, like see like maybe something that makes you uncomfortable and then showing the humanity of them as opposed to the other way around. So I like what you said when you said you're trying to value this person as a human being, when you're trying to just show them that they matter. You know what I mean? I think you doing that in real life mirrors what's being done in the film. So I appreciate that as well. So
thanks, man.
What do you think? Do you think they did a good job depicting refugees as somebody that maybe has more experience with maybe some things they're going through? What do you think? How do they do depicting that in this film?
Yeah, I mean, I think the conversation that happens after Julianne Moore's character has been killed, where they're arguing around the table and saying, well, should Key have the baby on the farm? Should we still try and connect with the Human Project? And Theo, Clive Owen's character, says we should take it public.
Make it public!
What?
Excuse me?
You should make it public.
Well, you saw the telly. She's about to be very public.
It doesn't matter. She's pregnant.
Oh, right. And then the government will say, well, we were wrong. Fuji's are humans too.
Yeah, well, whatever's going on, whatever your political ideas are, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Oh, come on.
She needs a doctor.
You really don't get it.
Look, the government will take the baby and parade a posh black English lady as the mother. Nobody's taking my baby.
We should go. And it really does demonstrate Theo's privilege.
Yes.
In a way, like, you could definitely argue, and I'd be open to, like, no, it's Theo making a character turn and him being more hopeful about things. And yeah, I think there's definitely a heavy element of that, but also the fact that Theo's protected still at this point. And, and one of the people in the discussion rightly points this out. Like, if we went, they would take the baby and then just parade it around as born to a posh Englander.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that you brought that up, because I think when I talked earlier about how I've grown with this film, when I first saw that, I was in Theo's shoes, or maybe lack thereof with his shoes in this movie. But nice. I was like, yeah, no, go to the police, like make this public, you know, go out there. And because as a, you know, white, straight Christian male, I'm, you know, the least oppressed and one of the most privileged people in this country. That's my initial reaction. You know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh, trust these people, because I've never had any reason in my personal experience to not trust them, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that they turn that around. Again, it's also Coron like toying with someone like me. I love that the audience for this film could be broad. So it's, you know, I feel like he's not trying to insult someone like me, or he's not trying to make me feel stupid or anything, but he's trying to get me to change. And that's, those are the best films that, like, it really got me to change. Cause now that I've grown with this movie, it's like, oh, of course they wouldn't do that. Of course they wouldn't want to do that. It really reminded me of how I felt watching Get Out. Cause I'm still growing, you know, I haven't fully matured yet, but I'm watching Get Out and I'm like, why on earth isn't this person going to go and call the cops, you know? But obviously, you know what I mean? Like, obviously what was going on in that film, the main character would have not felt comfortable because he was confronted on his way to the town, you know, by a policeman and like, yeah, but that's always my instinct watching films. And I'm so glad you brought that up because that's just kind of where I come from. So I like that this film, it did a good job with that. I feel like it didn't totally make Theo feel stupid. So it can kind of get people on my end to change their mind, but it also really represented the other side and like, look, like, you know, they won't trust us. We are the other, you know? And so, yeah, that film was great. I also think it was an amazing choice. I did some additional research, I guess. So this was based off of a story. I guess it was originally Julian, another white woman that was pregnant in the story. And I love that they changed it to be a person of color and a refugee because I think that like it just meant – so I think it added so much depth to the film that maybe wasn't there in the book. I haven't read the book. I can't be a judge of it. But I know I liked that because it just – it really kind of changed the narrative. I know some people have complained that it turns it into like a white savior thing and I'm not going to really like – I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with that, but I really, it challenged me more. Cause again, it offered up that scenario that you just brought up that like his privilege was there and hers wasn't. I think it was more, to me, there was more depth to that because she was a person of color, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, challenging people on all sides to see the totality of like the person's humanity. So
yes.
Where Theo sees Key not just as a Fuji trying to get to a boat, but as a young woman, like he helps deliver Dylan.
Yeah.
And is there at the moment of birth, shares in that. And Key initially is very antagonistic towards Theo, thinks he's sleazy, thinks he's not trustworthy. And in time comes to confide and lean on him completely.
Yes. You're right. I love that. I love that turn, you know, like for both of them, you know what I mean? Like, so her turn is more the trust and his term is more like, you know, just caring. Cause he's kind of just floating through this world a little bit. And we really get to see his arc. And I like where their arcs really intersect. And like you said, it's at the point where like, he is almost like not, I wouldn't say the father, but a protector of her, you know what I mean? Like, it's so great just watching that intersection. Cause I love the opening scene, which is one of the coolest opening scenes in any movie. He's walking in, all these people are just like, all the faces are drawn to the TV where it's showing that baby Diego, the youngest human being, is dead. And Theo is like walking in, barely even glances at the TV, doesn't care, you know what I mean? And then a couple scenes later, he's using that as an excuse to go get high with his friend, you know? And I love that. Like, I love that just seeing, like, seeing everyone just staring up at the screen. And he's just like, I just want my coffee. And that ended up, in a way, saving his life. But I love what Warren was trying to do to us there, just like all the faces, just, and I'd be that guy too. I would just be so caught up in the TV watching, you know what I mean? And I just love that he just doesn't care, man. It's just like he's past it, you know. But we get to see his arc and then seeing her arc as well. I think that's really fantastic. Great. It's, and it kind of goes back to like even like the thesis of this podcast, man, like just like, you know, care, you know, give a damn about the things going on around you, you know. Just don't be that guy. Just kind of, it's funny, I say this a lot, I don't know if I really mean it after 2016, but I used to say it a lot to people that disagreed with me, like, you know what, I'd rather you be somebody that's maybe more right than I am, or, you know, right on the spectrum than I am, than being somebody that doesn't care, you know what I mean? And that's usually, I think I believe that still. I used to definitely believe it before 2016, but now I'm not so sure. But really though, I would rather somebody care and then try to be productive about their beliefs instead of just kind of being that guy that's just gonna just get out of my way, I want to get my coffee kind of a thing. So I thought that was pretty
No, and even just like, I think, because I've heard you say it too, like, get involved, give a damn. Especially Theo in the early going of the film is very much not maybe antagonistic to your idea, but definitely apathetic to your idea.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, he tells Michael Caine at one point, like, even if they do figure it out, even if the riddle or question of why women are infertile, if that's somehow solved, it's already too late.
Yeah.
Like he says, like we've fouled up the world anyway, and there's no point in fixing it. That and just saying that we're too far gone, and the journey that he undertakes to insist and contribute to a kind of future.
Mm-hmm.
That's dynamic stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, you're so right. I love that. I love that the film isn't about that. You know, it's not about like, we're going to figure out what caused this. And the climax of the film is like, oh my gosh, it was this chemical in the air, you know, like that, yeah. That was not the focus at all. And I loved that, because that doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like that's not the humanity is what really matters. And I liked that wasn't that wasn't the crutch that it leaned on. You know what I mean? It was so much about caring and like you said, getting involved. And, you're right. That's super dynamic. And also too, I like that it also speaks to like, it doesn't matter what caused it, because all these people in the world, they're making up excuses. They don't know either. They're blaming refugees. They're blaming, they probably blamed gay people. They probably blame, you know, they're going to blame all these others just because the world is getting bad and I'm going to try to find a way to leverage my influence against these. And you can always do that against minorities, right? It's easy to do that when, all right, let's blame these trans people. Let's blame the Jews. We've seen that in history, right? I mean, whatever it is, let's just blame these other people. And so I like that it's like, and Quaron's like, no, you're wrong if you're trying to figure out what the cause is, because you're just like those other people that are blaming foreigners. You know what I mean? And I like that he puts that in the box. Like, stop focusing on that, because those are the bad people. You need to be focusing on the people that are trying to save humanity. Like, Theo becomes that person. So I think it's like, I think maybe he's putting us through, obviously Theo's the surrogate for the audience, right? He's trying to put us through his experience and his growth. So.
Yeah. And maybe this is just a personal journey for me, but
yeah, bring it up.
For me, it really speaks to the cost of grace and whether or not we are willing to, by our welcoming, by our embrace of someone that society would have us classify as other and reject, if we are to instead show grace and accept, that is going to change how we live life, and that's going to change circumstance. And maybe that brings something that's more persecutive. Maybe that just brings, you know, a couple of lost friends in social media.
Sure.
And I'm not to say, but just that notion of insistent welcoming. And I mean, this got a lot of play, I think, toward the beginning of the year. With the first Muslim ban, but Emma Lazarus's poem, which became etched on the Statue of Liberty, the last half of the last six lines of the sonnet, it reads, "Keep ancient lands your storied pomp, Christ she." So she being the statue, Christ she with silent lips. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." And that grace of, you know, the keep ancient lands your storied pomp, keep your glory, your trumpets, your gold, your glitter, all of that, and instead, give me your tired, your poor, the anxious, because we too were once strangers. We too were once enemies.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think to ignore that for whatever reason, I think is a great tragedy and is to our detriment.
President Trump said he has no regrets about ending the DACA program and throwing it to Congress to implement a permanent fix.
House Speaker Paul Ryan said President Trump made the right call ending DACA, and he expressed confidence a legislative compromise can be found. But Ryan stressed he will bring no bill to the floor that does not have the president's vocal support.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded.
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is the tragedy of our time. Like, if people are going to look back at our era and they're going to say that to those of us that are shutting the door to this country, that we were selfish, that we were ignorant to the fact that we were immigrants ourselves once, I think that it's going to be the tragedy of our time. Each era has that. You know what I mean? And I think they're going to look back and they're going to see that, because you read that, those lines to me, Dom, and it just, like, I'm like, we are capable of that. You know what I mean? That's not a statue somewhere in another part of the world. You know, that is in New York City. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that is on the Statue of Liberty, the symbol of our country. Like, we are absolutely capable of being a compassionate country, a country that cares about humanity beyond borders. You know what I mean? Like, we're absolutely capable. And for me, that kind of goes back to this film. This film, to me, I could see how somebody would walk out of this film, you know, very upset and lacking hope. I'm the exact opposite. This movie gives me so much hope. This really drives inspiration in me watching this film. And we can talk more about, like, there's so many scenes that do that to me. But, like, this film is so ultimately hopeful to me. And then when you share those the pros with me, it, to me, it's like, no, we're capable of that. You know, I know I'm looking at the news, and I know I'm seeing so much hate out there, people just hating these other people, you know what I mean? But, like, man, you were just so lucky you were born where you were born, because you were so lucky that you have the capability and the privilege to tell those people no, because they're sitting there, you know, they're waiting for our compassion, you know. And like you said, it's a tragedy, and I really think it's the tragedy of our time, and I'm hoping that that doesn't have long lasting effects. I'm hopeful. So but yeah, thank you so much for, oh man, this is why I had you on, Dom. I'm telling you, I really appreciate it. So let's kind of go scene by, let's not go scene by scene, but I want to say, is there like a particular scene that either hit too close to home, or maybe a scene that gives you hope? Yeah, when you're watching this, like something that you want to show somebody, like this is what I want you to see to prove this point, or there's something that, like, oh man, that really kind of kicked me in the gut. What do you got?
Yeah, I would say, honestly, the first one that comes to mind is toward the end of the film, where Theo and Key come out of the bombed apartment building with Key's baby, and all the fighting stops, and all the, I mean, it's been chaos. The past like 10 minutes of the movie has just been a madhouse.
Yes.
And everything, the moment that people see the baby, everything stops.
Mm-hmm.
And there's peace in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And they make it to the stairwell where the fishes are charging up the stairs. They stop. They get down another floor. The military, they stop. There is a reverence and a tenderness. It feels like a moment from another time, honestly, in the movie. And unfortunately, it is, as hopeful as the movie is also honest. And knowing that we live in a broken world. And so that moment too is broken by gunfire, and it relaunches into, if not equal gunfire, almost more gunfire than what came before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a moment that just devastates me every time.
Mm-hmm. To me, it might be, to me, the number one most impactful scene of any movie of all time. Like that scene to me is the most moving scene. I can never get enough of it. It brings me to tears almost every time I watch it. And yeah, just how, like, oh my gosh, it just, like, the weight of that scene, like, really overwhelms me sometimes, because yeah, I love how he had everyone, so many different players converging on that. You know, you had your fishes, you had the refugees, you have the government, like, you have all these, and every single one of them, they all stop and they revere this thing that they've been, and they actually get to see, you know, they get to revere this thing that they've been missing for so long. And it's, but like you said, it's so honest. It just brings, that doesn't stop everything. Like, that should have had everybody stop and drop their guns and everybody should become Theo at that point and be like, okay, let's get this baby to safety. And they don't, you know what I mean? Because we're all fallen, broken people. And it goes back to, oh man, you're right. It's devastating just to see that. And like, because again, I'm thinking myself in the soldier's mind, and maybe this is just because of my background, but I'm just like, this is great. There's a baby and I'm so happy about that. But if I stop paying attention, I'm dead. Like, something's going to happen, because there's people two blocks away that don't know there's a baby here. And if I have my guard down, they're going to kill me. You know what I mean? And that's just, and I'm just trying to get through my day, you know? And so my mind goes to that person, and, but that's cause I'm broken and I'm valuing someone else or my own life over other people, you know, but that's where I am in that sense. And somebody else might come to that scene and think the same thing. Like, I'm great. It's great that this baby's here. And then this literal miracle has happened. But if I don't get out of here away from the state, then the police then I'm going to be dead too. You know what I mean? And it's just like, yeah. It's so crazy how after all these years, you think these people would be, but like if Theo said it, they're too far gone. I think Theo said it themselves, that they're too far gone. For me, a scene that really gets me, I think, is the way the ending scene of the film. I know we talked about that film, but I'm talking about impactful. I really want to talk about and maybe in the shallow end, we could talk about the shooting scene where Julian dies. That'd be great from a technical standpoint. But for me, in terms of impactful, I think it was a stroke of absolute genius for Quaron to end. First of all, it says Children of Men right at the end. So is this like the longest opening sequence of any movie ever? Because the title comes up at the very end. Is that, do you think? but really though, I love that he ends it on Children of Men. And then we have the children laughing again. Yeah. Like I start to cry because first of all, I mean, I think you can objectively agree. Children laughing is probably the most beautiful sound in humanity. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I love that. And
aside from your voice, Jed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know. It's just smooth as butter. Yes. I know. I get it. I get that all the time. Yeah. And I was just trying to keep myself out of the equation, but I'm glad you really brought it back to just what the truth is. Yeah, Well, that's why I got into podcasting, because I needed to share my gift with people. So, but thanks for that, Dom. No, but to me, I love it, man. I love that it's, first of all, I love that you don't see the kids, you just hear it. So you can imprint whatever image of kids you want onto there, and that could be multicultural, it could be whatever. And I love, it's just so beautiful because it's, like I said, it's the most beautiful sound ever. And to me, I'd like to hear your interpretation on it, but that to me means that she made it. That to me means that like there is hope in the future. This is just another, it's opening up another chapter. I don't know if that's what he meant, but I think maybe because I'm trying to walk away with a smile. I don't want to just come out of the theater just like a destroyed man. But I think that's for me, that made me think that there was hope. And I thought that was just a stroke of genius because I remember seeing it in the movie theater and I'm, 18. I don't really understand everything, but I just remember the theater being quiet, absolutely quiet, and people had to deal with it. But I just thought that was genius. So, how did you take that away? The ending?
I thought she made it. I thought, and just always moved by that. And even again, like that's an example of something going on in the background. Mm-hmm. Some folks by that point, they see the title, they dump their popcorn and they're out of there.
Sure. Yeah.
If it's a movie and if you're listening, if you're open to it, you're going to hear the sound of a child. Maybe sounds similar. If one of those kids on the soundtrack sounds similar to a kid,
Yeah.
And you're going to think of a particular event or a particular location and is just going to make it so much more of an intimate experience for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I can't get enough of that. That's awesome. Another scene, too, I want to bring up that I liked is when Theo goes to visit his cousin, played by Danny Houston. And I think they call it the Ark, right? It's where they keep all, they're keeping all the art. Mm-hmm. And, okay, so I am not an art historian. I am not an expert in art in any way. But I know Guernica when I see Guernica, And I thought that was so brilliant, them putting, first of all, it's in a freaking dining room, and it's just there in the background, no one's really acknowledging it, and the message of Guernica itself is like how evil humanity can be, and how we're like, these people in the photo are being torn apart by the Spanish Civil War, right?
Yeah.
See, Miss Ladd would be very proud of me right now because she taught me that in elementary school, and I'm remembering all this. So thank you, Miss Ladd. But really, though, like, I love that it's there and it's just like no one's paying attention to it. Like it's just in the background while they're eating their food, and it's literally just exactly what these characters are doing. Theo at the beginning of the film, his cousin who literally says later, like, how do you get through this? He's like, I just don't think about it. And like Guernica's staring him in the face. You know what I mean? Like this is and like Picasso's painting like a century ago, we've learned nothing. And I just like, oh my gosh, like it's just incredible. I love that scene. And it was just, again, it wasn't like, I love that Quaron's like, it's not in your face. You didn't see like, there wasn't a close up on it. There wasn't like anybody sitting there staring at it to force you like, hey, Dom, pay attention to this part. It was just there. And oh my gosh, it's brilliant. It's so brilliant. So I thought that was cool. So
I love it.
And again, Danny Houston, man. I mean, you talk about my voice being beautiful.
Yeah.
His voice is just the best, man. It's just the best. Danny. So anyway, let's go ahead and move on. One of my favorite things to ask all of my guests that come on this podcast, because I think it's just, I love to fantasize about this. Like, I want to talk about the thesis of the film and like if we like approve of the thesis or not, but also would you use this thesis or would you use this film And would you sit down with Donald Trump and watch this movie with him, or members of Congress, or even friends that maybe don't agree with you? Would you try to convince them of this thesis? And I just like the idea of like popcorn with Trump. I know he may not be the most like guy that you would imagine that you'd be doing that with, but if you want to change his mind, is this a movie that you would show him?
Yeah, so going to the first, the thesis or yep. kind of insistent, like the message for me of the film is the, not just like, oh, we're wrong if we don't reach out to people, but just like our survival and our, like beyond survival, a thriving, a like without a grace, without an openness, an advocacy for each other, an acknowledgement of everyone, like there's not much left for us if we choose to turn so inwardly. And yeah, I would absolutely show it to Donald Trump, not because I think this is like a skeleton key
sure.
in any
sure.
sort of way.
Absolutely.
But again, like if I'm, you know, spouting like, well, we got to believe in each other and we have to reach out to one another, then that applies to Donald Trump mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
And that applies to members of Congress that I disagree with. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, like one of the things that's changed recently is every month I write a letter to Donald Trump.
Oh, really?
And wow. Yeah. And I'm under no illusion of him reading the letter or like putting it on his fridge.
Sure.
It's not
oh my gosh, man. I'm going to pray that happens tonight, but go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point or one of the things is that I can't write a letter to a cartoon villain.
Yes. Like, yes.
And also the letter isn't like, it's not a policy list of like, you need to do this better or you shouldn't do this. But again, it's like, if I acknowledge him, I have to acknowledge the fact that he has a family. I have to acknowledge yes. the fact that he works with people. I have to acknowledge the fact that he is a person, fearfully and wonderfully made. I disagree with things that he says. Yeah, but he is made in the image as I am made in the image. And
that's right. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Like, I have to show him because it's something that matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of my hands as to how he reacts to it, but I hope he would be receptive.
Oh man, that's great. That's possibly the best answer I could have imagined because I would have come at it way more shallow. That's fantastic because I'm so glad I had you on because for me, I absolutely would show it to him as well. Because the theme of this movie to me is it's like, it's kind of, we talked about too, like just, you know, give a damn, you know, like pay attention yeah. to what's actually going on around you and care and use that caring to make a difference. You know what I mean? Like Theo could have absolutely just said, I'm not going to help you. I don't give a crap about if this child makes it or not. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't matter to me. And he's been through enough. You almost wouldn't blame him. You know what I mean? Like he's been through a lot. You wouldn't blame him. Him meeting up with Julian again would have been probably a very devastating, you know, having lost a child would have probably been very devastating for them. But so you almost wouldn't blame him for that. But I think that, yeah, the theme is to kind of just like, it's twofold. It's not only going out there and making a difference because you can as one person, but also the value in humanity. You know what I mean? Like humanity doesn't have color or skin. It doesn't have orientation. It doesn't have borders. In this case, I think borders is really, especially if we're talking to Donald Trump, because he goes out there and he calls these people that are coming over here murderous and rapists. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I would like to know if he believes that or not. I would really like to know if he's just saying that to rile people up or if he's saying it because he believes it. And either way, I think it's bad. Because in one sense, we have somebody who believes in that these people are – the majority of them are horrible murderers and rapists. And that's yeah. a problem because I think he'd be misinformed. I'm not going to say that there aren't any at all. And I'm not going to say that there isn't an immigration quote-unquote problem in this country. But I think if he's viewing it through that lens, it's a problem. But also I think it's bad on the other end because if he's just using it to gain support with his base, then you're not manipulating your power for good. And that's why I would want to watch this with him. Like, see, Theo is using – you know, his resources for good. You know what I mean? He's not yeah. your typical hero. You know what I mean?
No.
And so, yeah, I love something too. I thought about while watching this film is the value of children, right? And how like when we lose children, when we lose sight of children, I think it really screws with humanity because we lose that like sense of future, sense of hope. So I don't care if this coffee shop blows up or not because it doesn't matter. There's not gonna be any kids for me to feel like I need to protect them from that or stop that from happening. So blow up all the coffee shops because whatever, you know. But I like also thinking, and I, you know, a lot of people get really upset at all these comedians out there humanizing Sean Spicer and humanizing Donald Trump, like when Jimmy Fallon ruffled his hair or whatever, quote unquote normalizing him. And I could see that there's bad things to that. But also, like, Donald Trump was a child once. You know what I mean? And he is a product of his environment. So if you're out there and you disagree with him and he's somebody that you don't see as your ideal president, I'm going to try to be as light as I can on that. But if you're somebody that he wasn't your first choice. He was a child once too. And if you don't like how he turned out, then your goal should be to treat other children differently and make sure other children don't turn into someone like that, right? Even though I wouldn't say he's the worst, you know, evil of evil or whatever. But if that's somebody you don't like, then I love that, like, we've lost track of what children are like in that world. But I think we've also lost track that we were all children once and we were all more innocent, I guess, or less innocent or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that'd be great. And I would love to I really would love to see his gut reaction to the refugee camps, because I think in his mind, maybe they're very abstract. You know, I think in his mind, they're, you know, something maybe he hasn't really physically thought about, you know, and this movie forces you to do that. And it forces you to see the good and the bad, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would love for that, to me, is what I would like to show him or show other members of Congress, that maybe these people are very abstract, you know? Because I think one of my biggest disappointments, and I'm not trying to, you know, tout my, like, too much of my, like, working in government experience. There's people that have way more connected than I am. I was really low on the totem pole when I was doing it. But I would say that the few politicians I met, my biggest disappointments is when they were disconnected from their constituents, you know, when they were very much like just looking towards the next election, or they couldn't see past their staff. You know what I mean? They couldn't see that. And when they rejected them as like, they're just not my class of people. And like I said, I've literally seen that. That was bothersome. And so I would like them to maybe see this movie and hopefully makes them think past their staff, I guess is how I would say that. So, but yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. So, I kind of worry about asking you this one, Dom. But in our takeaways and turning points part, section of this, what takeaways did you see, and have we made a turning point for better or for worse since 2006 when this movie came out? I know we talked about it before, but if you had to say, what do you think? And then what takeaway should we take to maybe turn in the right direction?
Yeah, in some ways it feels like we've not learned, because we have moments that call out for moments like Theo and Key walking through the apartment building. You know, you have a picture of a refugee child on a beach, or you have a picture of a child in the back of an ambulance. And for a moment, everything does pause. And then people are quick to categorize it. They're quick to give reasons. They're quick to cast doubt on its authenticity. Anything to put it in a box or anything to make it holdable. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, you can't hold or categorize that kind of ache, that kind of dissonance. And if anything, like, we have to be, if we are to be a compassionate community, if we are to be a community of people living together, we need to be able to sit with dissonance better. The fact that the world is not what we hope for, the fact that we are not what we hoped for at times, to show grace to others, to show grace to ourselves, to believe in a future, something that which we cannot entirely see. I think it's a Grecian proverb, but it's societies are better when old men plant trees whose shade they will never know.
Yes.
I long to do that, man. And I don't know how, but I like whatever I can do to contribute in a way that will echo beyond, you know, my mortal coil.
Sure.
And so just to acknowledge that, like on specific stuff, it feels like we've not learned in regards to climate change. It feels like we've not learned in regards to war and international relations. In some ways, it feels like we have, honestly.
Yeah.
Just acknowledging a a depth and a dimension to people. And so like I honestly can say, I don't think we've like completely blinded ourselves to this stuff, but I do think we have chosen ignorance on several fronts.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I think I wholeheartedly agree with you in the sense too that I like that you brought up grace several times in this point. And I think that that is not a priority to our country right now. Mm. And that to me was key. I keep going back to that. It was very significant in this movie to see that grace being put in the grace and the effort. So we need grace and we need effort. And I would say that like maybe the effort is there, but the heart isn't there. It's not in the right direction. Because I think there are a lot of people in this country, regardless of how they voted, you know, they really do want to get the country going in the right direction. But maybe they're, like you said, grace is not the priority. So if we could shift that, see all these people as humans, that could hopefully maybe be a turning point for us. So I really appreciate your thoughts on that. Another thing I liked to do, and I have a good example that can get this next question going for you, but we're going to see if there are any allegories or allegations you want to make on this film, and see if there's any characters or themes that you saw in the movie that you can relate in real life. I loved in the last episode, for those of you who haven't listened yet, we did an episode with our podcast overlord, Ben Helms, and we discussed Gangs of New York and how there was a scene in Gangs of New York that perfectly depicted the 2016 election for us. And I thought that was like a perfect answer for that. And I'm going to steal from that a little bit because there was to me, I'm watching this movie and I'm watching the Fishes and I'm like, man, the Fishes to me are the Bernie Bros of this last 2016 election, you know, and I'm watching, especially Luke. So Chidiwell Ejiofor's character, Luke, to me is like the ultimate Bernie bro. Like his heart is in the right place. You know what I mean? Like his heart is in the right place, but he's become militant and he's become like uncompromising and is so focused on like his way being right and the other way is being wrong. So I don't want to put anybody that may be supportive of Bernie down, but I was completely infuriated with his entire movement throughout the 2016 campaign. I thought I'm not going to blame him entirely. I think that there was 100 things that had to go wrong, and they did for Hillary to lose that election. But he was one of them. So I'm not going to give him 100% of the blame. But in an election where she needed to be more centrist and she needed to be more open and she needed to be more like connecting to the quote unquote every man, every American, or whatever proper term you want to use for that, he was pulling her in the opposite direction. And he forced her into a corner in the primaries that made her almost even more unelectable than she was in the general. And to me, like that is like that's what the Fishes are doing. Like the Fishes are to me. Were again, their heart might have been in the right place, but they just couldn't see the forest from the trees at that point. They'd gotten lost in their own rhetoric, and I viewed Bernie as a narcissistic person. That his goal was to just kind of get his vision out there. He knew from the beginning he was never going to win, and his eyes kind of got off the prize. And that again, that's totally my take. There's probably people out there that love Bernie and think Bernie represented them, and then that's great. I don't get me wrong. I think there was things that he was doing right. I just think that it was not the time or the place, if that makes sense. And yeah. That's how I feel about the Fishes. There's one of the scenes that sets up that amazing scene with the baby walking down the hallway is you have Luke with his weapon, you know, shooting down at the street. And he's talking about Dylan, the baby, crying. And he's like, I forgot how small they were and how beautiful they were. And he's crying. And he's like, oh, it's just, I just forgot how small and fragile they are. And he starts like shooting, you know, like it just like he just like it shifted right back to that. And to me, it was like he was talking about how amazingly beautiful children are. And he completely, you know, turned around 180 and just started shooting someone, you know, his enemy. And that to me was the Bernie Bros out there. They're like, man, like Trump's bad, man. Like he's the worst. And I hate him. But Hillary, Hillary, Hillary. Like that just to me, that was them to me. When I saw that scene, it's like, oh, man, the Fishes are Bernie Bros, man. And now we have to deal with Trump. So anybody, what about you? Is there any maybe characters, scenes that relate to something you see?
No, I mean, this question kind of, it's something I have to think about. And when you said that, I don't know, that's really convicting. That's one I'm going to have to kind of take away and chew on for a walk. Cause I think that's a really thoughtful insight of, yeah. Cause the Fishes, they're an activist group that, depending on your background, depending on your point of view, are, you know, antagonists in the movie, are protagonists in the movie, and their motivations Like they are in a gray space in this film. Yes. And yes. I don't know, Chad, that's a really insightful thing you got there. So I'm going to have to, I might call you later and we'll chat about it. But this one's got me thinking for a bit.
Oh, good. Well, good. I mean, the whole point of this podcast is to get people thinking, and we can either revisit it another time, or like I said, if you any listeners out there that you have a good one, we would love for you to, we really want everyone to get involved in the whole Overthink network. We have some great podcasts here. So email us any thoughts you have on this at overthinkpod@gmail.com. So yeah, if there's maybe something you see out there, if you want to tell me how wrong I am about Bernie or something, then by all means, please do that. But yeah, it was just that to me really stuck out. And I just want to go back to that. He was just one of 100 factors. So I'm not going to blame the whole thing on him. So, but, Dom, I really appreciated diving deep with you, swimming around in the shallow, and we've been treading water, for a long time, but let's go ahead and swim over to what I like to call the shallow end. You know, let's go ahead and just rest our feet a little bit. I always like to end on a happy note so we can kind of talk about maybe some things in the movie that have nothing to do with politics. Let's talk about performances, things. Let's pick some nits, whatever you want to do. I just, like I said, I like to end on more of a happy, positive note, and especially being somebody that I respect your take on films too. I mean, we can't neglect the film side of this podcast, and I can gush over this film for hours. So, but yeah, like, what do you think? You have any shallow end thoughts you want to bring up? I have some. If you don't,
yeah, I would say so. Theo and Julian meet in backstory. They met at a political rally, which for a couple of people that seems just like the wet dream of where to meet your soulmate.
Sure. Oh, Shiva and Shakti.
Lennon and McCartney.
Look, Julian and Theo.
Yeah, there you go. Julian and Theo met among a million protesters in a rally by chance. But they were there because of what they believed in the first place, their faith. They wanted to change the world, and their faith kept them together.
And so, like, where's another for you, another unconventional place of meeting your soulmate?
Oh, okay. Okay, for me, so a political rally would be up there for sure. You know what? For me, it'd have to be Comic-Con, you know? I'd have to say if I could meet my soulmate at a Comic-Con, but more specifically, it would have to be at a – I'm trying to think what would I'd want to see them at. I don't want to be like not in Hall H, not something big. It'd have to be like something off on the side. Huh? I'd have to think about that. But yeah, I'd have to definitely – yeah, I'd want it to be a more obscure side of Comic-Con, you know what I mean? Where we both, like, reach for the comic book at the same time and then, you know, and yes. Touch hands or whatever. So, yeah, that'd be me. Yeah. So what about you? Did you have one?
In Portland, there's a naked bike ride.
There we go. You know that what? Perfect. It. And, you know, just get it all out there, you know? Just get the mystery out of there, you know what I mean? Just cut the tension right away. And on a bike, what better way to do it, man? All right. Perfect. All right, I got a question for you, too. We're swimming around the shallow end, so I know this is a super shallow question. Do you think Clive Owen would be a good Bond?
He would have been a great Bond.
Okay.
I just don't think at this stage in his career it would work.
Yeah.
I think he continues to do great work. I think his work on the Nick, the series created and spearheaded by Soderbergh, was fantastic. He's still one of my favorite actors, but I feel like the role would be better served by somebody else.
I have to agree with you. I think when he would have had to go in when Daniel Craig went in, and I'm a diehard Bond fan, diehard Daniel Craig fan, so I wouldn't want to be robbed of Daniel Craig being Bond. I thought he was a great Bond, but I would have loved it if there was just some way we had enough room in our hearts for two Bonds, and I think Clive Owen would have been great. I think it would have been absolutely fantastic. And I need to watch The Nick, man. I've heard enough good things about it. I really got to watch The Nick. So absolutely. Thanks for doing that. I also really want to bring up that other tracking shot. So the scene where Julian is shot.
Julian, that's disgusting. Look out.
Jesus.
Go. Fuck. Go. We're going to make it. Come on.
I'm not going to make it.
I've seen a lot of like how they had like they completely rigged up that car that they were driving in and like and how they had to get it, you know, into one shot and how many times they had to rehearse it and everything. But just like from a technical aspect, and you might have a better example, but to me that might be one of the greatest like technically shot scenes like I've ever seen. You know what I mean? And just like I could watch it over and over again. And just I like watching it like not only. So like my initial thought is like I couldn't believe she died. Like I just like this movie's taking me there. I couldn't believe I was being forced to be put in that. So on that side, the emotion of the scene is real. I love how Theo is obviously shocked, but he's not like hysterical because it's very in character, you know. And I love that, like, on second thought, you can see Luke, like, you know, why is he taking so long to back up? You know what I mean? Well, obviously, you find out later he's in on the whole thing. You know, there's so much depth to that scene, like, just like emotionally wise. But then going back and watching it and being like, how did they technically accomplish this, like, insanity? Like, that scene is just like crazy. Like, from there were so many things that had to happen, including like dozens of extras, a motorcycle, like stunt people. Oh, it's just crazy. So, yeah, what do you think about that scene?
Yeah. No, I think it's a ballet, man. I'm impressed every single time and immersed in the moment. I think that's the best thing that a technical achievement can do, is just bring you so deep and so surrounded by what's going on, and being able to play with a moment, being able to play with real time. Like, you forego the comfortability of editing, of creating a rhythm. And here in a one shot, you have to let the rhythm more naturally unfold. And I think that makes that scene all the more powerful.
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. Okay, that's, oh, man. The ballet. Yeah. I'm going to use that every single time. I'm going to say my friend Dom calls it a ballet, and I can't think of a better term for that. So, well, anything else? Any other shallow thoughts you want to bring up? This is the time. Anything else?
No, man, I think I'm enjoying my time in the shallow pool, ready to dry myself off, I think.
Nice. Okay, cool. That's perfect. This is the best metaphor ever. If we could actually watch films by the pool, I think I would absolutely do it. And this would be, maybe this wouldn't be maybe that summer film that we would watch. It maybe doesn't fit in that
theme. Not.
And also I think most of the ones that are going to be brought up on this podcast probably won't be anyway. But yeah, I really appreciate you coming on here, Dom. I super appreciate your thoughts on this. Like I said, I was really excited when you said you'd come on because I wanted to get your thoughts on it, and you absolutely delivered. So thanks again, man.
Nah, man, it was a true honor. So thank you.
Of course. So not only do we have you on What Exactly Am I Watching Here, which is, again, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you on that one. I'm trying to slow my roll when it comes to watching Twin Peaks so I can kind of be on the same page as you. But I know we can find you on there. Is there any other places you want our listeners to come and find you, you know, follow your work?
Yeah, just Instagram. I post poetry. So Dominic Lang, check me out. And just keep listening to Overthink. And I'm sure I'll be popping around on various podcasts.
Awesome. And we thank you, listener, for joining us as well. Please, we want you to get in contact with us. Email any thoughts on this episode, any thoughts on anything else, maybe some films you want us to watch. We have some films in the queue that we're going to be reviewing, Jurassic Park being one of them. I'll probably get into Pretty Women as well, talk about some human trafficking and related to Pretty Women. You never thought you'd hear that, but I think that's one I'm really excited about. Hopefully, we get that happening. So, but please, if you have any other suggestions besides that, or have questions for us, please email us at overthinkpod@gmail.com. And thanks again for joining the resistance.